Tomorrow's Wimbledon final features 37-year-old Venus Williams. If she wins the championship, she would be the second oldest woman to ever claim the tournament's women's singles title, about 8 months younger than Charlotte Cooper-Sterry, who was 37 years and 282 days old when she claimed the championship in 1908. Whether or not Venus becomes the second oldest champ in history tomorrow, we do have some history to discuss in the latest edition of An Incomplete Guide to This Week in History. It was this week in 1904 that once and future presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan drew more than 3,000 people for an address at a Chautauqua in Fort Smith. While the length of his speech that July day may not be known, we do know he was famous, or depending on your mood, infamous, for talking for a long time. During his presidential campaign in 1900, he gave speeches of up to 4 hours in length. We also don't have available right now his subject for that day, but we do know he was a pacifist, a famed critic of Darwin, though his Fort Smith appearance was more than 2 decades before the Scopes trial, and an opponent of the gold standard. It was this week, 75 years later, in 1979, that Arkansas-born Don Kessinger had a front-row seat for one of the most notorious games in Major League Baseball history. Kessinger, born in Forest City, was the player-manager for the Chicago White Sox in 79, and on July 12th that year, the Chicago-based disc jockey Steve Dahl convinced the Sox to include the destruction of disco records in between the two games of a doubleheader. About 50,000 fans showed up, roughly 30,000 more than expected, to watch a pretty bad team. And a riot ensued as the publicized exploding of records drew near.
Jimmy Pearsall back in the ballpark, and I'm sure glad, and I hope they don't let you people see what's going on here at Comiskey Park. One of the saddest sights I've ever seen in a ballpark in my life. This garbage of
the White Sox would forfeit the game when order could not be restored. It's the last time an American League game has been forfeited. For the record, Don Kessinger himself had nothing to do with that promotion. It was this week in 1914 that labor strife resulted in 2 deaths and the eventual closure of a mine in Frogtown in Sebastian County. The legal battles over the week-long episode stretched out for more than a decade. And it was this week in 1934 that Helen Spence was killed. This might be news to you, but the saga of Helen Spence was a major news story in the 1930s. The death was alleged to have occurred as a result of the 32-year-old's escape from the State Farm for Women. But history suggests there is much more to the story. This week, we called Denise Parkinson, who lives in Hot Springs. She's the author of the book, Daughter of the White River, Depression-Era Treachery and Vengeance in the Arkansas Delta. It's a book about Helen Spence. Denise says the story actually begins a few years before Helen's death, when Helen Spence attended the trial of the man who was accused of killing her father.
Jack Worrells was a thief and a murderer because he attempted to rob Cicero Spence, Helen's father, and he murdered him and threw him in the river. Helen attended the DeWitt County Courthouse trial, and she pulled a pearl-handled lady's pistol from a fur muff that she was wearing. It was in January. And she shot him 4 times in the chest in a pattern so tight you could put a hat over it.
The shooting was covered nationally in sensational detail. The New York Times headline, Girl Kills Alleged Slayer of Father in Court. She is tried and convicted of manslaughter. She served 8 months and was paroled. Less than a month after her parole, she was questioned about another death, a man found dead before Helen Spence had begun serving her manslaughter term. She denied any involvement, and the state's prosecuting attorney told the state parole board he was certain she was not connected to the second death. A week later, she confessed. Denise Parkinson says this turn of events is a major conundrum.
There was really no explanation. Why would she go back to prison? She had been released on the condition that she never go to Arkansas County again. So she was exiled from the only home she knew, from all her family, which she had a grandmother in St. Charles. She still had a sister who later was taken to live in Oklahoma. Why would Helen confess to a different murder of a man who had made advances on her while she was working as a waitress in DeWitt awaiting trial?
Denise Parkinson says in the time since her book was published, she's come across a possible answer and a grisly history That suggests a horrible atmosphere for women and poor people in the Arkansas Delta during the Depression. Denise says what she was told and what she now thinks happened came from people who grew up near the women's prison.
The missing week that in the book I was going off of newspaper accounts from that time period, the newspaper accounts must have been doctored by whoever, for whatever reason, because there was one document in the prison files that made no sense. It was, to me anyway, it was the parole document. It was signed by a man named W.B. Graham from Lone Oak County, which is in that area. He had put up $1,000 for Helen Spence's parole. He was the head of the school board of Lone Oak County in the 1930s, and he basically bought Helen Spence. She was not, as it says in the book, because it said in the news accounts, she was not living in Little Rock under an assumed name.
Denise says her continued research indicates, she thinks, that a woman's parole could be purchased, a Depression-era type of human trafficking. And her theory extends to why Helen Spence would confess to a murder that she didn't commit.
The most interesting photograph tells that story. There was a rather flashy Little Rock police detective. He was the head guy in Little Rock as far as the police. And in my book, you'll see an illustration of the photograph of the meeting he had when he got to brag on the front pages of all the newspapers that he had gotten the confession from the Arkansas River gun girl, Helen Spence. He did that in such a way, I think, based on all the information that came out after the book, I think he did that just to get splashy PR for himself, and he might have told Helen, oh, if you're being held against your will by this gentleman, W.B. Graham, who put up the $1,000 for your parole, all you have to do is say that you did this, and I'll fix everything.
The confession led to a 10-year sentence of hard labor. Again, newspapers across the country created dramatic headlines from Alabama to New York City. And those headlines would continue because Helen Spence had a talent for escape.
During the height of the Great Depression in Arkansas, when the prison systems had no money and there was a drought, and so their farm agricultural basis was just crumbling. So the superintendent sent the girls to Memphis to prostitute them and return money to the prison. She, Helen, had been working in the laundry, so she saved a bunch of gingham cloth napkins, the red and white check gingham napkins, and sewed them into the lining of her prison dress. And when they stopped on the way in West Memphis at the bus station, she went into the ladies' room and turned her dress inside out and just waltzed away because she was beautiful.
But she was always caught again and given lashes, and at one point committed to the state mental institution and was submitted to torturous punishments. Finally, this week, 83 years ago, she escaped for the last time from a specially designed cell.
They set her up. They let her escape. According to the grand jury testimony, there was a man at the prison who was working on the water pump, on the water tower, the place where we found the foundations 80 years later. He claimed that it looked to him as though they were letting her escape, just walk away. So when they caught up to her, there was some discrepancy in who actually pulled the trigger, because it was a kill shot behind the ear, a close-up assassination-type execution behind the right ear. Yet the man who took the rap for the killing was carrying a shotgun.
The drama continued after Helen's death. The assistant prison superintendent was charged with accessory to murder for purposely allowing Helen to escape, but he was acquitted. The trustee, charged with firing the fatal shot, was convicted and served a sentence. Then years later, would tell people about his role in the ordeal.
Frank Martin, who took the rap for killing her, the prison trustee, who was himself a murderer, went around bragging that he had killed the notorious Helen Spence, and he went in to buy a loaf of bread in Casco, and a lady from the river was behind the counter, and she sold him a different loaf and said it tasted just as good and cost less. And he didn't wake up the next morning after he ate dinner that night.
Denise Parkinson is the author of Daughter of the White River, Depression-Era Treachery and Vengeance in the Arkansas Delta, about Helen Spence. We heard excerpts from a conversation recorded earlier this week. You can also read Denise's entry about Helen Spence at encyclopediaofarkansas.net. And she also maintains a Facebook page advocating for a pardon for Helen Spence, who was killed 83 years ago this week. And that is your latest incomplete guide to this week in history.